Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our Morning Talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producer for our show, Harriet Williamson, Jason Croft is at the controls for this hour. Kyle Mabry was on for hour number one. We have all heard the argument that success, and whether we're talking about success in life or success in business, we've all heard the argument that success is the result of the hard work, creativity, and sacrifice of individuals with little or no outside help. Now, our guest for this hour of Focus, Mike Lapham, from the group United for a Fair Economy, he makes the argument that that idea, and we've certainly all heard it, it really ignores the ways that society and governmental action and sometimes just luck all contribute to individual success. And that, he says, has a profound impact on the way that we think about government. In this hour of Focus, we'll talk with Mike Lapham about a book which he co-authored. The title of the book is The Self-Made Myth and the Truth About How Government Helps Individuals and Businesses Succeed. This book has just recently come out. It's available in paperback, so it is not terribly expensive if you'd like to explore it and the ideas. BK is the publisher here. As we talk, questions, comments certainly are welcome if you'd like to get involved in the conversation. I would just ask people to try to be brief, but certainly people who want to call in can do that. The numbers 333-9455, that's for Champaign Urbana folks, or 800-222-9455. That one's toll-free, so wherever you're listening, you can use that one. We do also have an email, so if you'd like to send along your thoughts that way, you certainly can do that. And that is, the address is will-talk at illinois.edu. And at any point here, you certainly are welcome to call. Our guest, Mike Lapham, is the project director, a co-founder, and a member of the Responsible Wealth Project there at the group United for a Fair Economy. And again, if you want to find out more about United for a Fair Economy, you can go to their website. There also is one specifically for the book, A Self-Made Myth. Well, Mike Lapham, hello.
Good morning. Good afternoon, I guess.
Where you are, yes. Where I am, it's still morning.
One of each. Okay, so can't go wrong.
Thanks very much for talking with us. We certainly do appreciate it. And
my pleasure.
I guess that this, this is the kind of thing that one hears over and over again. I'm sure, we've been hearing a lot of it during this election season because the thing that you call the myth has a certain kind of political potency. It's the idea that the person who creates wealth, the person who creates jobs, it is a person, it is one person, and that this person is they work harder, they're smarter, they're more creative than everybody else. And that people do this all by themselves, and that's a notion that you go right at head on.
Right, absolutely. The myth in this country, and it's been around for a long time, is that this one individual works harder than everyone else and gets the whole job done by themselves. And if anything, if you believe that myth, you also are likely to believe that government gets in the way. And that leads to this whole anti-government narrative that leads to the idea that inequalities of wealth and income are justified because it just really reflects how hard someone worked. Taxes are viewed as punishing success. Government should be seen as kept as small as possible to free up these job creators and so on. There's a whole string of public policy decisions that flow from if you believe in this myth.
And then the other side of this, the counter that you would like to argue in, or at least you'd like to get people thinking about the ways in which society, individually and as a group of people, and also government, does indeed contribute to or it provides a kind of infrastructure for, maybe that's a better way of saying it, a kind of infrastructure for individuals to succeed.
Right. We call it in the book the built-together reality. The reality is that, there's a lot of individual effort, and there's a number of other factors which we can get into that are sort of circumstantial around building wealth and business success. If people take an honest look, that's what this book is. Like, people who are willing to take an honest look, you realize there's a lot of contributions by government, and that we actually have an imperative to invest in those things that make business success possible, you know, transportation, schools, roads, research, and so forth. And then if you believe, if you take this more honest look, then there's a whole set of policy decisions that are different. You know, inequalities of wealth can't just be justified based on work. You know, progressive taxes are what you pay. You're giving back. You're paying it forward for your ability to create wealth in the society. Bill Gates Sr., who we've done some work with on preserving the estate tax, the responsible wealth in United for a Fair Economy, where I work, you know, has said, you plunk my son, Bill, you know, the founder of Microsoft, down in any developing country, and there would be no Microsoft. You know, so what is it worth? He asked this question rhetorically. What is it worth if you could bid for what country you'd be born into? How much of your wealth would you pledge on a little sheet of paper in order to make sure that you were born in the United States? Would it be 50%, 75%? You know, it really makes a difference where you are, and it's this investment by government that really makes a lot of business success possible. Sure, there's a lot of things that government doesn't do well, and mistakes it makes, and so forth. But part of what we're pointing out is there's a lot of aspects that are taken for granted that really do support business success.
Yeah, or do certainly support individual success that maybe then makes it possible for an individual to go on and be successful. There's something here you write about that I think is really interesting, and I think it suggests that how difficult it is for people to think about this. And here you make a reference to a study that was done in 2008 by a professor at Cornell, Suzanne Mettler. And what she did was that she went out and she did a survey and she asked people, well, have you ever used a government social program? And, you know, got significant numbers of people who said, no, never have. And then she started asking them about, well, particular things. And you can tell the rest of the story. What was it that she found?
Well, she found that people who denied having had any investment, you know, accepting any government help, realized that, well, you know, 53% of those people actually received student loans, but said they'd never received any help from a government social program. Between 40 and 44% said they had, you know, received Social Security or Pell Grants or unemployment insurance, veterans benefits, GI Bill, Medicare. All those people, you know, 40 to 45% of those people claim to have never used a government social program. So we're just kind of blind to how we do rely on this, and not only ourselves, but what are our parents getting that are taking the burden off of us helping them? What are our neighbors getting that are, you know, helping, you know, keep a healthy society, help a healthy community together? What are the ways that we all rely on government's investment? And, you know, many of those things are safety net, but some of them are also investments by government in opportunity, in people that make it possible for them to then have a successful career.
Mm-hmm. And the kind of thing that once you start thinking about it, this starts to get fairly broad, because not only are you thinking about, let's say, something like the GI Bill or student loans, that contributes to an individual and they're getting a good education and then maybe them going out and doing something with it. And much more broadly, though, you think of all the things that exist that support business. And so you think about the physical infrastructure, you think about roads, or you think about the fact that there are laws that protect patents and copyrights, and we actually have a legal system. We have the regulation of interstate commerce, which may be somewhat problematic sometimes, but it makes for the smooth transfer of goods and services. And there are all sorts of things that government does that smooth the way that we don't really think about it in those terms, and in fact, maybe we don't really think about it at all.
Right. Right, and there was also a terrific article in the New York Times a few weeks back where talked about people who are really these critics of the safety net, who again, a reporter was able to spend some time with these people who are harsh critics of the safety net and really interview them and take an honest look at how they are benefiting. And these were people who, you know, maybe even didn't even realize how much they benefited, or their parents, their children benefited from special programs and so forth. One of the great things about this book, and the book's called The Self-Made Myth, and if you want, you can read excerpts at selfmademyth.org. There's excerpts there, there's infographics, there's a place for business people to tell their own story. We're trying to collect people's own stories of how does government help you, and maybe to some extent what could government do better. But the book is full of examples of business. We have about 14 profiles of successful entrepreneurs, including Warren Buffett, but mostly people your listeners might not have heard of, but who really tell the story of how government investment helped them succeed. So, you know, Ben Cohen from Ben and Jerry's ice cream, you know, talks about getting pamphlets from the Small Business Administration for 25 cents. And he said, you know, there was no BS in them. They just told you how to. I had no idea how to run a business. I didn't know how to make ice cream either. You know, he took a correspondence course called Ice Cream, you know, from Penn State University, I think, and got these pamphlets, got a loan from the Small Business Administration, ultimately sold stock in an in-state offering, and so 1 out of 100 of the people in Vermont wound up owning a part of Ben and Jerry's. He even credits the cows, you know, as being and contributing to his success. But he's someone who, you know, takes an honest look at how is my success made possible? And there's all these various investments in my employees, in my customers, in the community. You know, Gunn Denhart from Hannah Anderson Clothing Company says you can't have a healthy business in an unhealthy community. So she recognizes that investing in education is so important, not only for her employees, but the whole community. So there's these great, great stories in the book. That's one of my favorite parts, is sort of the firsthand accounts of people who are willing to take an honest look.
Yeah.
I think every one of these people probably has been profiled at one time or another as a success, as a self-made type person. You look at them, at quick glance, you go, a self-made person. But I think the story they'll tell you is there's no such thing as self-made.
Yeah, I think it's also very striking that we talk about how wealth is created, how jobs are created, and again, you say we've seen these profiles of these individuals. They're the ones that struck out on their own. They did something new. They were thinking in some new ways. They were out in their garage and they made something that nobody had ever made, and then they went out into the world. And I think the thing that, again, that we don't really think about is that the ways in which government works to try to produce a kind of stable environment for people to work in, and the fact that it's not a free-for-all.
Right.
It's not like that at all, as much as sometimes people might like to think that it is.
Right, and a number of people in the book point to this role of government as providing stability and transparency. Amy Dominey is the founder of Dominey Social Investments, and she wrote a book called Ethical Investing right at the time of the anti-apartheid movement and became famous that way. And she developed this index for rating companies based on their performance in a number of measures. But she says, people have no idea how well regulated the mutual fund industry is. If you're investing in a mutual fund, you know exactly what you're getting, because I spend a quarter of my time just complying with all the regulations. And she says people should have great confidence, whereas if you're investing in a hedge fund, you have no idea what's in that black box. You know, so there's all of these rules of the road. Anirvan Chatterjee is also in the book. He's the founder of bookfinder.com. It was a search engine on the web that helped you find rare books. He used to be a Doonesbury fanatic, and he started this company when he was in college, sold it to Abe Books in Canada. They sold it to Amazon. But he says, we had contracts with all these different book providers and book companies all around the country, We had no way of enforcing those individually, but we knew that we could, that people took those seriously. They had the force of law, and after centuries of business law in this country, we knew that they would be following the contracts by and large. And if they weren't, they could be enforced. So he just had that faith in the system, made it possible for him to do business instead of being out there chasing his customers and trying to figure out if they were doing what they said they'd do.
Our guest in this part of Focus is Mike Lapham. He is the founding director of Responsible Wealth. That is a project of the group United for a Fair Economy. And if you're interested in finding out more about them, you can go to their website. He is the co-author of the book The Self-Made Myth and the Truth About How Government Helps Individuals and Businesses Succeed. And this book is published by BK Books. And again, that book has a website. And if you'd like to read some excerpts from the book, you can go there and do that. Otherwise, you can go out and buy a copy of the book. Questions are welcome. Questions, comments, welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Here is a caller to talk with Coles County, line number 4. Hello.
Yes. I just wanted to say that I feel this is one of the most important programs you've ever had and one of the most important books you've ever focused upon. It's amazing how many people don't seem to fully understand how important the government is at all levels to them, state, federal, and local governments. And if these various programs were taken away, even for a few weeks or a few months, people would become panicky. It would be a great educational lesson to them. Sometimes I think that programs like Social Security and Medicare have been around for so many years that there are some people that don't even quite understand that there are federal programs or even government programs of any kind. It seems hard to believe, but I think there really are people like that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, congratulations on your book. That's all.
All right.
Thank you.
I thank you. You can comment on that, Mike, any way you might want to.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I hope you'll write a recommendation for our book. You know, go to Amazon and write a positive review of the book. You know, and you've heard people going to these, you know, Tea Party rallies and holding up signs that say, "Get government's hands off my Medicare." You know, just totally unaware that Medicare is a government program and that it's subsidized. And yes, I think this is one of the important issues of the day because we're not investing because of this myth. We've kept taxes low on small business people. That's the argument. We need to keep the job creators. We need to keep their taxes low, and then we extend that to all wealthy people, and we say everyone who's wealthy is a job creator, and they're not. And we're not investing. As a society, we're not investing in the public education that made it possible for all these people to succeed as business people. We're not investing in Pell Grants and things like the GI Bill and Small Business Administration loans and even the safety net. You know, even things like food inspection and, you know, clean air, clean water, all of those feed into business success, and we're disinvesting because we say we can't afford it. We can afford it. We're a very wealthy country, and the people in the top 1% got 90% of the income gains in 2010 alone. So all the, you know, there's people at the top have tons of money, and we're saying we can't afford to tax them. One of the things that I know from talking to business leaders is they don't make business decisions based on the tax rate. If they make a profit, they're generally happy. You know, Martin Rothenberg spoke the other day at one of our event in New York. He said, if I make a profit, I'm more than happy to pay taxes on that. You know, that. So the reality is people, and he said in 25 years on the management team of his company, Syracuse Language Systems, taxes never came up once as an issue. So, but the people in Congress have bought and sold this idea. And the media has bought this idea that we have to keep taxes low, and it's killing us because we're now going to be cutting government to the bone when we should be investing in the future. We should be investing in education and research and opportunity.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the things that is kind of striking, and there's a little bit in the book that has to do with, it sort of looks at the history of this idea of the self-made myth. And I guess the thing that really strikes me is that how not only has it been persistent over time, but it's changed in the sense that it seems to me, at least, if you go back to early America, the argument is that the person who benefits most is the individual. That is, the hardworking individual, well, he himself benefits. But we have now come to the point where we say that these people are important not just because what they do for themselves, but the argument is that the entire society depends right. on them. And that has changed, I think, how we think about this a lot if you say that the economy rises and falls on right. people like this.
Right. And this is not by accident, by the way. You know, there were the writings of Ayn Rand earlier in last century. You know, she had this whole, you know, the Atlas Shrugged. The whole image there is you've got Atlas holding up the world, and this is the wealthy, you know, business leaders who are heroic and who are responsible for all the business success. Now, you know, she was a fiction writer. This is fiction, but it had a powerful resonance with a lot of people who wanted to believe that hard work was the number one cause for success. There's now this guy John Allison who from BB&T is giving $2 million grants to schools that will teach Ayn Rand's course. You know, will teach Atlas Shrugged in their. So a lot of about 60 schools have taken him up on this offer. So it's been an intentional effort to make it seem like we're dependent on these job creators. There's a gentleman by the name of Nick Hanauer who's a investor out in Seattle, and he wrote a terrific op-ed in the Seattle Times a couple months back, and he said, "I'm not a job creator. I've created companies with a couple hundred employees, yes, and I'm still doing that type of thing, but I can't create jobs alone, and certainly lower taxes on me don't create jobs. What creates jobs is demand for my products, is the middle class." And so this, you know, he totally debunks this idea that we need to have low taxes. So we, you know, at United for a Fair Economy, we're circulating a letter now that says we need to raise taxes again on upper-income folks. We need to roll back those Bush tax cuts. We need to tax capital gains as regular income. We need to have a strong estate tax. If people go to faireconomy.org/openletter, they'll find and they can sign on to that letter. But it's very important that we not buy into this myth that we have to keep taxes low on the wealthy.
Again, our guest in this hour of focus is Mike Lapham. He's the founding director of Responsible Wealth. That's a project of the group United for a Fair Economy. He's the co-author of the book Self-Made Myth. So again, questions, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I thought it might be interesting for people to hear you talk a little bit about your family. We mentioned the fact that there are a number of entrepreneurs and business people profiled in the book. Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, your great great grandfather started a paper mill in New York back in the 19th century, and now five generations of your family has been involved in this business. How does your experience help you make your own case, do you think?
Well, I'm certainly not a self-made man. I'm not even sure if I'm a made man at this point. I'm also not a self-made author. I have a co-author, et cetera. But, you know, when I think about my great-great-grandfather, he was an entrepreneur. He worked hard. He was a leader in his community. And he started this paper mill on the banks of the Hudson River in Glens Falls, New York. And they cut down trees, probably from at that time from you know, publicly owned land. I don't know, you know, they ultimately owned a lot of the land in the Adirondack, but they floated them down the public river, down to Glens Falls, where they made paper and shipped that, you know, with publicly educated employees, and shipped that paper all around the country on public roads and relied on public regulation and so forth. I would even go as far as saying they dumped a lot of stuff in the Hudson River that taxpayers are paying for, and that's true of a lot of companies. So my wealth, certainly, you know, his wealth came from a lot of public investment in those roads, in those people, in the research, the technology that made it possible for him to make paper. And, you know, to this day, I certainly owe a big chunk of my wealth to public investment in lots of different ways. There's a bunch of factors. I mean, we look at all the factors that go into building wealth, and you start with the circumstantial ones, you know, hard work, creativity, leadership, those are important. But privilege is also being born white, being born male, being born into wealth with connections. About 42%, I believe, of the Forbes 400 were born right onto that list. So it's not like they got there on their own. I think about George Bush when he was running for president, who said, you know, who acted like he was this great businessman. And the reality is, you know, he was kind of a business failure, but he believed that he was a success. And there was a great quote with someone saying, think of how many different people's lives he had to reinvent to believe what he believed about himself. So there's all this privilege that goes into it. There's luck, there's historical timing, being in the right place at the right time. We could talk more about that. And then there's all the contributions of other people into your work. So all of those things are factors beyond yourself. And then the factors that go into, you know, public investment includes, you know, the investment in public education, the investment in opportunity, like the Pell Grants, like the GI Bill. There's infrastructure and research that government invests in, and I could give several examples of that. And then there's the whole regulation and the courts and the rules of the road and even safety and security, that all of things, these are mostly things that we take for granted. And we criticize government for the things it doesn't do well, but we fail to recognize how much government's investment makes this business success possible.
We're talking in this hour of focus with Mike Lapham. He is the co-author of the book, The Self-Made Myth. We will talk some more after a very short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, journalist Peter Beinart talks about his new book, The Crisis of Zionism. He supports Israel, but thinks the Jewish settlements in the West Bank are compromising Israel's commitment to democracy. He's proposed a boycott of goods made in those Jewish settlements. We'll get a response from Gary Rosenblatt, editor and publisher of the Jewish Week of New York. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics every week. You can go to the website and check up on what we'll be doing. Just a quick mention that tomorrow morning, it's the first Wednesday of the month, and it has been our great pleasure to have the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, is his name, and we have a lot of fun with him. He stops by and we talk about cooking. That's what we'll be doing tomorrow. Also, we'll talk with a poet on this show. Toy Derricotte will be our guest, an award-winning poet, professor in the English Writing Program at University of Pittsburgh, and will be visiting this campus to talk about writing. And let me mention one more. On Thursday at 11, this is the monthly show that we do that we call Computers and You, and this is something that we do to try to help you out with problems. If you're having some difficulties with your computer, or maybe you're thinking about buying a new one and you have some questions, Celeste Quinn will host and Peter Kimball will be her guest. He is computer-assisted instructor specialist. with the Center for Teaching Excellence at the U of I. Again, if you check the website, you can find out what we'll do in the days ahead. You can also listen to past programs. It's WILL.illinois.edu. You can also find us on Twitter, Will Public Media. In this hour of focus, our guest is Mike Lapham. He is the founding director of Responsible Wealth. That is a project of the group United for a Fair Economy. Go to their website. You can find out more about them. He's also the co-author, along with Brian Miller, of the book The Self-Made Myth. The subtitle is The Truth About How Government Helps Individuals and Businesses Succeed. BK is the publisher, which really takes on the argument that wealth is created by individuals, by people who, by virtue of their intelligence, hard work, creative ability, they have those things more than anybody else. And that's really how wealth is created in society. That's where success comes from. They make the argument, he and his co-authors say, well, there's really a whole range of factors, including a very strong infrastructure that is created by and supported by government that contributes to people's success. And that this idea, the self-made myth, has many implications that certainly affects the way we think about government. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And let's talk with somebody in Belgium, right here, line number four. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I'm the other guy from Belgium.
Oh, good. Welcome, the other guy from Belgium. Yeah.
Yes. I was thinking about the tycoons and even Bush and Cheney. They wouldn't have made it if they didn't have sweetheart deals.
Right.
You know, especially like Cheney and Halliburton, that was a real sweetheart deal.
Right. No, I think you're right. There's a whole bunch of people in this country who made their wealth off of public lands, whether it's railroads or oil drilling or even ranching and farming. A lot of these came from grants of public land that were given to people, and even one of the things we do in the book is profile several of the people who people would think of as self-made, like Ross Perot, like Donald Trump, and like the Koch brothers, who, the Koch brothers have been very much, attacking government and attacking the safety net. But you look where their money comes from, and a lot of their money is made from oil, drilling for oil on public lands and ranching and farming, which are heavily subsidized.
So you don't buy into John Rockefeller, his statement that God gave me my money?
No.
No, hell no. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the call. I mean, if you look at several of the big tycoons, at the end of the 18th century, many of them were born right in the 1830s. So they came of age after the Civil War, and it was a very opportune time for developing commerce. And you look at the Standard Oil, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the Mellons, all those folks, it was a very opportune. Many of them were born right in the 1830s. And then you look at, there was a study that was done in the last century of 400 geniuses. Malcolm Gladwell has it in his book, Outliers. And you look at these 400 geniuses, and depending on what year you were born, you either did really well or really poorly. So actually, if you came of age right during the Depression, then you, whatever you had built up, you're likely to lose. But the people who came of age right after Second World War did very well. From the same class of geniuses. And the same thing is true if you look at people like Bill Joy and Paul Allen and Bill Gates, who all did really well in the tech field. They were all born within about 5 years of each other and came of age into their professional careers just as the mainframe computers were being outsourced and the personal computer was coming in, and there was this whole rise of opportunity. Had they been a few years older, they probably already would have been working for IBM. Had they been a few years younger, someone else would have caught that wave. But they were in the right place at the right time. So luck played a big part, you know, as well as Bill Gates, you know, had a successful father who was, you know, a lawyer in Seattle and was able to help give him some funding to start his work. And that's true for a lot of other folks.
Yeah. And I know that you are not intending to say that these things that are the elements of the myth, that is, you know, hard work, willingness to sacrifice, single-mindedness, going after something, you're not at all saying that that's not important and that people who succeed don't have those things going for them. But at the same time, you're also saying you got to look at other factors, and being in the right place at the right time certainly is one of those things. And I expect that a lot of people that you might talk to would be willing to admit that. They would say, well, you know, it's not that I didn't work hard. Sure, I worked hard, but there was an element of luck involved.
Right, right. Gun Denhart from Hannah Anderson, you know, was walking. She was originally from Sweden, and she's walking her child around in Brooklyn wearing these beautiful, wonderful striped clothes made out of cotton, and people said, where did you get that from? You know, so her luck at being in the right place at the right time, and she said, you know, they started a company building them, you know, making clothes like that and selling it, and they started as a mail order catalog. She also talks about the internet, the importance of the internet, and once they were able to do online buying, their sales jumped, you know, considerably. And so she owes a whole portion of her success just to the government-created, you know, internet that was started with government investment. And you look at all the ways that government invests in technology, in medicines, and so forth, all this research that happens at the universities would not be done by the private sector. But once there's an idea that's marketable, someone takes it to the private sector and develops it. Jerry Fidler, who's in the book, is the head of Wind River Systems, which is the embedded software that's inside your little digital camera that you carry around with you, inside the Mars rover lander, inside the internet. He developed that from research that he did at Lawrence Berkeley Laboratories on embedded software, and took that idea private and developed it. So he totally gets not only that investment in research, but the investment in him. He says, if government hadn't invested in me, I would have never gone to graduate school. I would have never gone to college. I would have, you know, who knows? You know, if my mom hadn't had good prenatal care, I might have been 28 points, you know, less intelligent. Mm-hmm. So he totally recognizes that the investment in him and the investment in research made Wind River Systems possible.
Are there many cases that you can point to that where you have companies that have been really successful or individuals that have been successful that really did rely on some kind of grant or loan or startup funding, some money that was that actually came from government?
Sure. A number of cases. There's Thelma Kidd, who started Davis Kidd Booksellers in Tennessee. She's profiled in the book. And again, if people want to read excerpts, you can go to www.selfmademyth.org, and there's excerpts of several of these profiles on our website. And there's some graphics. There's some really interesting stuff there. Tell you, and as I said earlier, people can tell their own story. But Thelma was one of the first recipients of Small Business Administration loan for women, and helped her build to the point where she had stores all over Tennessee and, you know, hundreds of employees and millions in revenue. There's a number of people in the book who talk about that. Kim Jordan from New Belgium Brewing Company in Colorado talks about Pell Grants and the importance of the local public universities, both individually and for her employees. And Nikhil Arora is an interesting case. He, fairly young entrepreneur out in the Bay Area, he was in college at UC Berkeley, and
he was in a class, and his professor mentioned that you could make gourmet mushrooms from coffee grounds. And he looked at his, you know, he and his fellow student both asked the professor more about this, and they looked at each other, and they said, we've got to do this. And they got a grant from the chancellor, $5,000 grant to develop this idea. And then they also got some money through the ERA program. President Obama passed this. I'm not remembering what ARRA stands for, but Reinvestment and Recovery Act, American Reinvestment and Recovery Act. So for projects that would employ people right away. So they totally recognize that those government investments, you know, he says it takes a village to raise a millionaire. You know, there's several cases in this book of people who totally get that those government initial government investments make their business possible.
We have another caller here. Let's talk with him. It's in Piatone. This is line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. Great topic, actually. Couple of things. I'm kind of, maybe I'm anti-grants, but I everybody seems to be giving everything away nowadays. We've gotten to the point in this country, we want a lot out of our government, and unfortunately, because the amount of people that we have here now, population growth dictates you can't be spending everything on everybody all the time, and that's what we've come basically down to. Some grants have been pulled, lack of funding, some haven't. What you consider would be a good grant or money well spent, in some other person's eyes, it's a waste of time and money. And the reason I bring this up is that, one, the entrepreneurship in this country has gone down the toilet. And I was listening to a TV show the other night. It was the Shark Tank, and I don't know if you've ever seen that show. But basically, this guy came up, had an idea to put Americans to work in this country. There was 5 of them, and they all 5 shot him down. It had nothing to do with the amount of money so much as it was where he was going to do it. He wanted to do it in North Carolina. He didn't want to do it in China like they wanted him to. And that's the problem we've come across. I mean, if we're going to give grants, we're going to start shipping people out of this country to make things. You know, we should be paying more attention to trying to get the entrepreneurial guy in business, one, no matter what it is, whether it's an IPO. You know, and I suggested this to a couple of people that I was talking to. Let's put 10%. You know, I'll give the guy $10. If we get, you know, enough people in Carolina to support this guy, he could get it right off the bat, public stock. There you go. I mean, we can't rely on the government for everything anymore. It's gotten way too many people in this country. And quite frankly, I'm tired of paying for somebody else's wealth when I'm struggling. Thanks. I'll get off.
Okay. Well, you can react to that any way you like.
Right. I mean, very good call. I mean, I think the reality is there are certain things that government does really well. And then there are certain things that government will never do particularly well. And we need to know the difference. But one thing that's been shown is that, you know, the difference, you can put money in the government's hands, you know, by collecting more taxes. And government is a, you know, investor. The government spends it, you know, on its own employees and on projects and, you know, whether it's highways or whatever, all of our research, and there's various things that government does, but the stimulative effect of putting money in the government's hands, and I don't remember the exact dollars, but it's like, you know, $1.71 for every dollar of investment, you know, versus if you put money in the pockets of wealthy people through tax cuts, through these Bush tax cuts, now, you know, they're likely to save it. They're likely to put it in the bank. Maybe they'll buy some stock that someone else is selling, but that's not creating new investment in society. That's just trading stocks. So the best way to stimulate the economy is keep putting it in the hands of the government, or in many cases, putting it in lower income folks' hands. Because by definition, if you're lower income, every single dollar that goes in your pocket gets spent by the end of the year. So that, if you want to stimulate the economy, the times that we've
we've put extra money back in the hands of working people, that's a good way to do it.
We are coming to the point where we have maybe about 5 minutes left, 5-6 minutes left. Let me, for anybody who's just tuned in, introduce again the guest, Mike Lapham. He's the founding director of Responsible Wealth. That is a project of United for a Fair Economy. You want to find out more about that, go to their website. Also, if you're interested in the book which he co-authored, Self-Made Myth, there's a website there for that as well, which you can take a look at excerpts. Or you can go out and look for the book. BK is the publisher. The subtitle is The Truth About How Government Helps Individuals and Businesses Succeed. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think the issue here is that there will be some people who will be immediately receptive to the argument that you're making, and some people who will immediately want to reject it. And I guess the question is, for those people who are not going to be amenable to your argument, at least right off, how does one go about changing people's minds, or at least getting them to entertain the notion that, yes, in fact, these other forces, the general social forces, are at play, and that there are things that government does do and has done that create the conditions for people to succeed?
Right. I mean, I believe that this is an argument that you can't refute. I actually believe that, you know, people on all parts of the political spectrum, when presented with the evidence of all of the ways that government helps businesses succeed, are going to admit, yes, government has an important and positive role. There's very few people, there's a few libertarians out there who would say government should only do national security, essentially, you know, and police, national defense, and that type of thing. But most people recognize that having public transportation helps businesses succeed. Having regulations is important for commerce to operate. Having roads and stoplights that stop, you know, and keep people from dying, and having seatbelts, and you can go on, and public education and research. Most people understand that you know, investment by government is important. It's just that we tend to forget about it. We tend to put it out of our mind, and no one wants to pay taxes. You know, when you get right down to it, everyone has things about government that we don't like, or we want to excuse ourselves from paying taxes because I don't like the military, I don't like welfare, or whatever. But the question that we're really getting at here is, who should pay? And we believe we need to stop coddling the rich. We need to stop, say, you know, with this myth that we need to keep taxes low on the very wealthy. And I mentioned before, this sign-on letter, we want people to sign this letter to Congress and to President Obama and say, we can't afford the Bush tax cuts anymore. For wealthy people, we can't afford to tax capital gains at 15%. So the people like the self-made Mitt Mitt Romney are walking around paying 14-15% on money made from money, while the rest of us are working and paying 25-35% marginal rates. It just doesn't make sense. It's not justifiable. Our letter, which is at faireconomy.org/openletter. Our letter also says we need a strong estate tax. If you end up, you know, die with a couple million dollars, or $5 or $10 or $100 million, some of that was made with government investment. You should pay some of it back to make sure that the opportunity and the investment is there for future generations. Mm. So, you know, this myth has important implications, and we want people to recognize it when they hear job creators. When they hear self-made man, when they hear Mitt Romney described that way, take a look behind it and say, how did he really make his money? And how did government play a role in that? And what is his responsibility in terms of creating that for the next generation?
Yeah, something that I think is really interesting, because the argument is often made that it's small, particularly small business, but all small and medium business, they're the big wealth and job creators in society, and often those are the people that will make the argument about government being too intrusive, there being too much regulation, mm-hmm. there being too much red tape that gets in our way.
Yep.
That if you take a look at Europe, where there definitely is a different kind of approach to the social safety net and to regulation issues and so forth. And in fact, that per capita, Europe has more small and medium-sized businesses than the United States does. And they certainly have a different approach to taxing. They have a different approach to social supports. And you can make the argument that, in fact, those approaches work and make it possible for people to take the risks involved in starting businesses.
Right. I think if you go back to that first caller who said people just don't realize how important it is, if you take away these things for a week, a month, you know, people would start to realize how important Social Security is, how important Medicare is to their parents, you know, and on down the line, people have no idea. They take it for granted. But if you were to take those things away, in Europe, obviously, they have higher taxes, and they have better services and a better quality of life and a slightly more even income distribution and better mobility. You know, people are able to, which is a whole other issue.
Mm.
But there's one more person I'll mention who is Sarah Blakely. I don't know if your listeners would have seen her name in the news. She was the newest billionaire, and she's a woman who invented a product called Spanx. And she said, "I am grateful to be a woman in the United States." I think she recognizes that because she was here in this culture, she was able to succeed that way. It wasn't about her. It was about the environment that makes business possible. So if we want to have that environment for other entrepreneurs to succeed, we have to invest in it. And we're not doing that right now.
There we must leave it because we're here at the end of the time. If you're interested in reading some more on the subject, the book is titled The Self-Made Myth by Brian Miller and our guest Mike Lapham. It's published by BK Books. Mike is the founding director of Responsible Wealth. That is a project of United for a Fair Economy. You can find their website and find out more about them. And you can go out and look for the book. And Mike, thank you very much for talking with us.
It's my pleasure, David.